everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political right and the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourvani.
Hello. I'm so grateful that you're doing dueling roles today.
Just the two of us. And it's a role I'm comfortable with. You know, Shireen, I have been a political appointee with a lot of different Republican leaders.
Yeah.
Started with Dan Marriott in the U.S. House of Representatives. I was just an intern there, but he was Republican. And then I was with Bangeter and Leavitt and Walker.
Yeah.
And George W. Bush. So
some different ideologies there, but but not wildly.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pretty consistent.
Well, and what I would say to people who think about, you know, political ideologies in this state is our governors are very much moderates.
Yeah.
Centrists.
Yeah.
Productive middle, as I always will say. And so I'm really comfortable being a Herbert Republican, a Huntsman Republican, a Leavitt Republican,
yeah.
You know, Walker Republican, a Cox Republican. I take issue at times with the parts of the Republican Party that are so, you know, ideological and not as pragmatic.
Yeah, so, I can understand that. We've talked about this before, but I feel like my personal politics are moving, I would say, in a more progressive direction, but I'm not in a law, you know, in a lawmaking role now. But what I found when I was is pragmatism always won out for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted good government. I wanted transparent government. I wanted a government that functioned and responded.
Prevented problems, solved problems.
Yeah, problems, solved problems, responded to people's needs, even though my personal politics, I would say, maybe are drifting further left.
Yeah. Well, I have always appreciated how much respect you've shown to me.
Oh, well, I've always appreciated you and your thoughtfulness. Well, I feel like we're in the Christmas spirit here.
Yeah, so. We are. But we've got hard topics to talk about.
We do.
And let's just start with the collapse of the Syrian government and Bashar al-Assad. And, you know, you have some ties to this part of the world?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. How are you seeing this?
So for listeners, I'm half Iranian, and that the experience of being Persian in America with really not a lot of cultural connection has made me always interested in this part of the world, but it's not a place where I have deep, deep cultural knowledge. But I'll just offer this, that the Assad regime for decades has terrorized and disappeared, murdered, many, many, many thousands and thousands of people.
I mean, they think there might be mass graves in excess of 100,000 humans.
Yes. Yeah. And so to see this government come to a collapse as quickly as it did, given the stronghold, the strangulation of power that they really had, is incredible. And I've been listening to a number of journalists that are there talking about just the extreme surprise that people have with the ability to move freely. They're going into prisons, finding just horrific scenes, and also finding, hoping there was hope against hope that people would be found in some of these prisons have long been killed by this regime.
The term instability, rings loud to me. A lot of instability in the world right now.
Certainly. Yeah. So it caught my attention that Germany's government is in a collapse of sorts. France has been at this doorstep as well, numerous times over the last 6 months or more. It does actually seem like there are problems brewing in Canada. And I guess I just offer this. Well, tell me what you're thinking about it, Natalie.
Well, I'm an avid reader of political commentary on these kinds of things. David Brooks has talked about, you know, if you don't like polarization, get ready for global disorder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's a whole different level of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And pain in some ways.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm a fan of investing in our institutions. And you say that and it's like, what do you mean when you say that? Institutions for me start with families and extend to communities. Mm-hmm. Eventually they become the way we have a law and order. So it's, you know, our House of Representatives, our Senate, our Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Certainly our universities, our schools, all of those are institutions.
Yeah. And I would add to that list, you know, I think about things like how important parks, safe parks are to good, strong communities. I think about libraries. Mm-hmm. I think about schools. You know, you mentioned universities, institutions. I think about things like access to healthcare and safety nets.
So, Shireen, you know, I lead a public policy institute in the state. We are a nonpartisan, independent entity, but we bring in a lot of incredible scholars and policy leaders. And we have in the spring a guy named Raj Chetty coming. He's a Harvard guy. but he does a lot of work on social mobility.
Oh, interesting.
And the reason I bring it up in this context is one of the best ways to invest in institutions is to recognize, you know, what are the policies that work?
Yeah.
And what Raj teaches is that investing in neighborhoods, investing in integration rather than segregation. These are some of the things he finds help the most with upward mobility.
Yeah.
So excited to share that with our state. Hey, we also got a president who's in the final days, you can say, it's weeks still, but days of his presidency, and he's issuing some clemency orders that are really raising alarm.
Yes.
Kids for Cash judge, a doctor who watered down cancer drugs. Another person receiving clemency is a Mississippi doctor who gave her patients diluted chemo drugs as part of a Medicare fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like these things. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, so this is the single largest clemency declaration, I guess, of any president. It's 1,500 individuals. My understanding is that a huge number of these people were actually already on home release because of COVID.
Yeah. So more of the long tail of COVID.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how so many things trace back to COVID.
Yeah, people kind of forget that this happened. But there was the notion that, and this was actually happening in our own Salt Lake County jail. I remember it well because I was in office when this was happening. COVID was spreading really quickly through institutions like that. So in our jails, we knew that there was a need to, if possible, move people out who were unlikely to be violent offenders. So that was a prioritization that was made during COVID. And most of these individuals, my understanding is, are folks that fell into that category and have actually been home during that period. Mm-hmm. So I guess these are not things that I like. I don't like, you know, that people may have may feel that they did not serve their time or pay their debt to society. Of course, we have an incoming president who has also not paid his debt to society. But that aside, there is a huge question, I think, about the way in which and the extent to which we incarcerate in this country. And is really jail, prison, is that where these people should be? I think is a deeper question that we have to struggle with.
Well, we also have a president-elect who just got $15 million from ABC as they've settled a dispute, a defamation suit. This has been widely criticized, Shireen, because people thought that ABC capitulated.
Yeah.
This was a winnable case. It involved George Stephanopoulos, who on air, I guess, said that the former president was liable for rape.
Right. And in fact, it was sexual assault. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between those. However, much of the commentary that I've been reading about this said that ABC likely could have fought this. The way that people understand sexual assault or rape in our public are often collapsible. Mm-hmm. So is it liable to say that? It's incorrect. But my understanding is that the upper administration at Disney is the one who said, we do not want to get into fights with this administration. Now the Trump administration is going after the Iowa Register about having released a poll that said that Kamala Harris was potentially gaining or in the lead there. So I think that people should
be... So interesting.
Is it interesting? I think it's terrifying. I think people should be paying close attention to the fact that media is not going to hold this administration accountable. They are making it difficult for media to do that. So you will not hear the complete story because people are afraid.
This notion of interesting versus terrifying, I get your point. I will say that I try and put myself in the back rooms of Disney and whatnot as some of these things are going down and what the conversations are, what the risk assessment is.
Yeah.
And I just find it fascinating what's going into the calculus of these decisions.
Yeah.
I understand that it's terrifying, too. Yeah. I get that. What about these tech billionaires donating to the inaugural fund? This is Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, OpenAI's Sam Altman. This doesn't surprise me. We have a lot of money in politics.
We have a lot of money in politics and in ways that we've never experienced before. This government is for sale. The Trump administration, I think, sort of acted like they were going to be more discerning when it came to business deals and partnerships in the first administration. That's out the door now. I think especially if you start to erode trust in institutions or put loyalists in institutions that would otherwise hold a president accountable, which is what we're seeing, that we will see more and more of this. What's your take on it? Not surprised and...
Yeah, not surprised. And I wish we'd have campaign finance reform. I realize it's a different issue, but I think there's too much money in politics.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, well, I don't think we'll have much much disagreement on this either, but I was in New York City last week, and I'm headed into town from JFK Airport on the Long Island Railroad, and I'm looking around the train, and I kept seeing people that looked to me like Luigi Mangione.
Yeah.
This was on Monday, right before he was arrested. And I just wanted to share that because, I mean, that's terrible. Why am I doing that? Except that it was fearful to be in a city that it had that blatant of a crime. And now it looks like, they have charged this Luigi with murder, but it's a different kind of murder. It's murder as an act of terrorism.
Terror. Yeah.
And I felt a little bit of that terror is what I'm trying to say, is just being proximate to it.
Yeah. Yes. So this story is horrific. Mm-hmm. The response that it has elicited is the response of people being frustrated with how the American healthcare system has failed a lot of people in this country feels very justified to me.
Mm-hmm.
In no way does that justify this kind of violence.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, but the governor of New York said that they were going to create a hotline for CEOs who are feeling threatened. That, to me, is where we have gotten into a level of response that feels out of step with how much violence we're willing to accept in other areas of our lives.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Every fall when I send my kid back to school, I feel terrified.
I learned while I was in New York that at Washington Park, they had like a sit-in of people that dressed like the now charged suspect.
Oh, yeah, they have these look-alike contests.
Yes, and I thought that was off pitch as well. I mean, I don't like making heroes out of people that murder people in cold blood.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and then we'll try and find some more tension in our discussion
as we go into the local news.
Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner on the right.
And you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle today. I think heading into the holidays, it's just hard to get everyone in the studio together. So we appreciate you listeners hanging with us as it's just the two of us today. But let's shift to local news. What are some of the things that are standing out to you, Natalie?
Well, I took great interest in Governor Cox releasing his budget. And I used to work in the budget office and I was very familiar with it. I have a copy of it up on my desk, interestingly.
Yeah.
Most people don't get a copy of the governor's budget, but I like it so much that I get a printed copy of it.
Do I have to ask for that?
Oh, yeah. They don't really print them anymore. It's sort of a limited edition, if you will.
Yeah.
But there were some things that were kind of interesting. I think that what was most interesting was his decision to exempt, state tax from Social Security from state taxes.
Yeah. So this is something that now past Senator Karen Maine worked on for a number of years, and I would love to see this go through. So we are not every state, but it's not. I don't think it's quite half and half. I should know this, but not every state charges income tax on Social Security.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah, it's very few. It's a handful. I would say it's like six.
Okay, I was going to say this. I think we're an anomaly in this case.
Yeah.
Many ways in which Utah is an anomaly, but this is one of them. And I think, when we were talking earlier about kind of instability, the experience that people are having, kind of, I think all of the frustrations we've talked over the year about inflation and on and on, we know that that hits seniors particularly hard.
Mm-hmm.
Folks that are on a limited income or a fixed income, those extra dollars, whether it's an extra, I think this is, we're saying about $1,000 a piece to these about 150,000 Utahns, can really make a huge difference for individuals. I would say also things that the Biden administration did, like put caps on Medicare spending, drug pricing work that's been done as well. But these kinds of dollars can go a long way for older Utahns it's hard to age in this country. So I think this is good policy. Do you think this is good policy?
Yeah, I think the governor did the right thing here. And we've done this before, Shereen, but Sophia DeCaro is the state budget director, leads the governor's office of planning and budget, a terrific leader, a former legislator representing parts of West Valley City. So it has worked with the Sinusure Group. Anyway, she's a star.
She is.
In state government. And it's really neat to see someone like Sophia in charge of a $31 billion plus budget.
Yeah, you know, incredibly something. Thoughtful. I think yeah. a leader who's open to new ideas.
Yeah, and the only issue I took with the governor's budget it was just a public commentary. And it might maybe you blame the media a little bit for this, but there was a headline that basically said that higher ed has lost its way.
Mm.
And I don't agree with that. Yeah. I agree that there's a place where we need to get better.
Yeah.
I agree that we need to listen. I agree that we need to become more efficient. I agree we need more viewpoint diversity.
Yeah.
But for the state that just got ranked as the top state for innovation, for a state that has the highest upward mobility, yeah. for a state that has the greatest degree of income equality of any state, a state that has as much social capital as we have, those are all fruits of education.
Of education.
And a large part, higher education.
Yeah.
And anyway, I think it, I you know, but I'm friends with the governor and you know, I understand that sometimes you say things that you don't really mean or maybe you really mean it, but I don't think it's helpful to have a governor saying that something as important as higher ed has lost its way yeah. when I feel like we've got a terrific momentum and we're doing great things.
So I have to say that one of the things that stood out to me as a graduate student, I guess I haven't been in the classroom in almost 10 years now, mm-hmm. but when I was, the thing that impressed me about Utah in a way that felt different than some of the other places that I taught was the diversity of mm-hmm. students coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnic diversity, mm-hmm. more, it felt more diverse in some ways mm-hmm. than our city or state feels, even though that's not, I think it's yeah. on par.
Yeah.
But it felt like a very diverse student body. It also felt like there was a large diversity of thought. There were a lot of kids who were coming from rural Utah, coming into this, you know, into mm-hmm. the city, into these programs. I taught in communication, so organizational communication. I'm sure the flavor's a little different mm-hmm. in the business school. But to see kids come from all over the state and frankly, all over the world and country to get an education in a place that brings together so many different strains of thoughts and histories mm-hmm. was remarkable.
Yeah.
And so I guess I would ask these legislators or people yeah. who feel this way to maybe spend more time yeah,
well,
on college
it's
campuses.
One of the great explanations for the success of the United States of America is we have the best colleges and universities in the yeah. world. Mm-hmm. People flock to them. And boy, we have some challenges. We have some problems, but we have great leaders to fix them.
Yeah.
And I Amanda Covington leads the board of higher ed. She's amazing. President Taylor Randall is someone I work closely with. I think he's one of the leaders you get once every 200 years.
Yeah.
He's that good.
Yeah.
And I think very highly of President Tumenez, Mindy Benson at Southern Utah University. The president of Utah State University. This is a great crop of leaders. So yeah. that's my only take
okay.
on that.
I take it. I'll take it. I won't bite you on that one.
Yeah.
So there's been some other interesting news. I think when we're thinking about discourses that are happening in the broader public, a voice I'm kind of curious to see what he'll say next is Mitt Romney. So Mitt Romney is in his final days mm-hmm. as a United States Senator representing us here in Utah to be replaced by John Curtis. He recently said that the GOP is Donald Trump's party, and he gave this example of mainstream Republicans are now Main Creek, is what he said. What did you make of this? What did you hear him saying?
I think Senator Romney is very good with words. Mm-hmm. I think he's clever. I think he's insightful. I'm glad he didn't say Crick, Main Creek Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
At least we'll say it Creek, because, in our state, we'll say Crick sometimes.
That's right.
But he's right. I mean, our president-elect, it's his party.
Yeah.
And it's become a much smaller share of the Republican Party that are what I would call economic conservatives.
Yeah.
In some ways. And you might say, what? Aren't all of Republicans economic conservatives?
No.
You're not an economic conservative if you're spending like you're spending right now.
Yeah.
If you're not a economic conservative if you are not taking care of national defense in the way we should.
Yeah.
That's an economic issue
sure.
for our country. You're not an economic conservative if you're putting tariffs on things.
Yeah.
Free trade has done more to lift people out of poverty in this world than anything I can think of, Shereen.
Yeah.
Interesting. I really mean that.
I believe you.
I went to China for the World Fair. I didn't go there for that, but I was there when the World Fair was in, it wasn't Beijing, it was Shanghai.
Shanghai.
And I saw all the buses that came from all over the country where they brought in, the Chinese people to see the World Fair while it was in Shanghai. And I remember just my mind was just filled with, how big this world is and how much their market inclinations have helped that country.
Yeah.
Those people that came in those buses used to live in dire poverty, and it's China's engagement with the world that lifted them out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that has other problems, but still, I like free trade.
Yeah, I know you do. So you mentioned something that's on my mind, I think, as we're heading into this Trump administration. You know, the notion is that my understanding, I'm actually not sure what the Fed did today on interest rates, but what I understand is that we are starting to see inflation come down. It's not coming down as fast as we had hoped. Mm-hmm. And we certainly understand that people are experiencing the high cost of living. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that's coming up when we talked about this kind of larger global destabilization in a lot of these Western countries, European countries. One of the big issues people are talking about is the fact that it's so hard to buy a home, to afford food, to really get ahead, right? That kind of sentiment feels pretty broad. But one of the things that I'm worried about, really worried about, is this notion that we've now elected a president who wants to impose tariffs, who is anti-antitrust, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so does not believes that it's okay for monopolies and you know, like these kind of large conglomerations to come together, which ultimately I think impacts free trade. Mm-hmm. And we're also talking about a president who's very seriously talking openly about mass deportations. Mm-hmm. When we think about the folks in our society that are really holding our economy together here in the United States, all of that to me sounds like a recipe for disaster when it comes to increased cost for the average American. Are you worried about that too?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, this is the question. On balance, will the new president's economic policies be a plus or minus? And on the positive side, we think there'll be some deregulation that's helpful. We think there'll be some permitting on federal lands for oil and gas that will be helpful. I think you could argue that his trade stuff is more bluster than it's going to be. And so if we have some targeted strategic tariffs that help in national defense and help with industries of critical importance, you know, that could be okay.
I love your optimism on this.
What I don't like is across the board to Canada, Mexico, you know, here you go.
Yeah.
I think that's inflationary. And it's inflationary because you just raise the costs of inputs and you raise the costs of, you know, new products.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that is challenging is the Trump tax cuts expire. This is from his first term in December of 2025. They'll be extended, but they'll be extended permanently under this
administration.
Yeah, the trifecta of Republicans. And that's okay if they're okay, if they are responsible on expenditures. But if they do deficit-financed tax cuts, wow.
Yeah, bad news.
I mean, I don't like it. It's very stimulatory in the short term, but it's very harmful in the long term.
I don't like it because it's tax cuts for billionaires. So again, we agree, but maybe different language on that. So we are coming up here on the end of the year. Do you reflect back on favorite movies, books, music? Is there anything that you read that really stood out to you this year that you would recommend to our listeners?
It's been a rich year for reading for me. I don't know why, but a lot of great books. Top of list for me would be Age of Revolution, Fareed Zakaria. And then The Anxious Generation, Jonathan Haidt. I was on a call with him last week. Now, to be honest, there were about five others on the call.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like, wow.
Exciting.
I'm on a call with Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah.
Anxious Generation is the Gen Z point on anxiety and what our smartphones are doing to us. And Age of Revolution is Fareed basically making the case that we're in a cultural realignment right now.
Yeah. Well, that feels
upheaval,
right.
Upheaval.
So I read a lot of fiction.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
I can't remember the last piece of fiction I read.
So I made my list, and I have three fiction, three nonfiction. So the books that I enjoyed that were fiction, one was called Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle. That was about female boxers. It was really great. All Fours by Miranda July. I've long enjoyed Miranda July's writing. This is, I think, not for everybody. I would say it's a little kinky, a little strange. But a woman kind of in her, around my age, a little older, so into her later 40s, and sets out on this cross-country trip and gets about an hour from home and has quite an adventure there. And then Martyr, a novel, which is, and I'll say one of the things I loved about both of these books, Martyr and All Fours, is there were characters named Shireen in them.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's very unusual. But I would say the others that stood out for me, Jessica Valenti has long written, actually writes a daily newsletter on abortion and reproductive health and wrote a book called Abortion, Our Bodies, Their Lies, and the Truths We Use to Win. This was really moving for me, especially thinking about the way, I think often the misconceptions and misunderstandings that people have around the topic of abortion. I read the message, Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, which mm-hmm. got a lot of attention for the portion on Gaza. I actually found the part on book banning more personally. I thought they were both strong, but more personally compelling. If you're wondering how we got here on book banning, I think that was a really important read. And then I read Hanif Abdurraqib's There's Always This Year, which was about basketball, but I loved it anyway. So I had a number of kind of diverse things.
So this is some of our biggest differences is what we read over the past year.
Yes. All right. Any Super recommendations fun. You have for people going out into the end of this year or the holiday season?
You know, the biggest recommendation I have, I've been doing a lot of looking at the Harvard study on human development. Yeah. This is the big one that starts, you know, like in the 30s and has 90 years of longitudinal work. Relationships. And I've been thinking about that more. And I have written to my staff about the notion of the good life.
Yeah.
And the good life is about relationships.
Well, call a friend, stay connected, and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening, everyone.
That's a wrap. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, been with Shireen Gorbani, and the program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.